about a minute after 1 o'clock. You're tuned into the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We're also streaming live online, ijpr.org. I'm Eric Thiel. We've got another great live session in store for you today. Guitarist Otmar Liebert is my guest. Otmar Liebert, welcome to Jefferson Public Radio.
Thank you.
You are originally from Germany, correct?
I was born there. I've lived actually now most of my life in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
And mixed parents, a lot of different ethnic backgrounds in your family lineage.
Yeah, big soup. German-Chinese father and German-Hungarian mother.
Hmm. When did you make the decision to move to the States?
I had, when I was 19, I traveled through Asia for a year. There's an express train that goes from Paris to Moscow, and I hopped on that and then took the Trans-Siberian train to the eastern border of the then Soviet Union, took a boat to Japan, and then traveled from Japan to Taiwan, Hong Kong, Thailand, Nepal, and ended up in India just
wow.
as Afghanistan was invaded and couldn't make it any further on the land route. And so flew home, and after about a month or so, I thought, you know, I had met some Americans that I had become friends, and they said, you know, come to the States. And a lot of my musical heroes were from the States, so I thought, you know, I should really check that out.
Now, musical heroes, as I recall, you were... for quite a while, a rock guitarist, electric guitarist.
Yeah, well, I see it more of a extended teenage period.
You know. So who were those musical heroes at the time?
Well, the first concert I ever went to pretty much already blew my mind. I had gone to see Santana, who was already a hero of mine, and I was maybe 15 at the time. But his opening act really blew my mind. That was was Earth, Wind, and Fire. So then I got into Miles Davis, and in 1990 I had the great fortune of being an opening act for Miles Davis. Most of the music I was listening to was from the States.
Mm. So what prompted the decision to move to the States?
It just sort of came out of spending time. You know, I lived in a place in Vermont for a few months, and I really enjoyed it. So then after that I actually moved to Boston and spent... almost six years in Boston.
And what were you doing? Were you playing music?
I started out, as the proverbial dishwasher.
Mm.
Then I became a bank teller. And after they offered to take me, pay my school, because they liked my work, I was faced with this instantaneous decision of what to do. And I remember I said to the bank manager that I was honored, but that I was a musician with a day job and not a banker with a hobby. And so I quit, and I took the only job I could think of that where there was no upward mobility, and that was bicycle messenger. And I survived 3 years in Boston as a bicycle messenger.
Wow. Did you enjoy doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could stumble out of a club in the early morning hours, or you know, recording studio time was cheaper after midnight, so we'd always get that. And just catch some sleep and start working at whatever time you were ready, because you were really an independent contractor.
Yeah. So how did you end up in Santa Fe? That seems an unlikely place for a musician to call home base.
It's actually pretty funny. I had an acquaintance, and he was moving back to Santa Fe, having been born and raised there, and wanting to take care of his parents. And he had always said, you know, you should come check out Santa Fe. It's really a trippy place, and things might really happen there for you. And I'm like, man, that's a little town in, you know, the middle of nowhere. And I arrived, I think, in May of 1986, and just basically restarted my life. And I was, you know, what do I really want to do? And my friend had a nylon string guitar, really horrible, but playable. And so I just started playing that, and I reconnected with my first instrument, which was classical guitar, and just started playing flamenco-type things and bossa nova-type things, and started playing in restaurants, and also studying with a local flamenco guitar player, and just things evolved from there.
Otmar Liebert is my guest, live on open air, for a live session here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. The new album is called Dune. Can we hear how that decision turned out?
You mean play a song?
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you.
It's Otmar Liebert live on open air here on Jefferson Public Radio's Rhythm and News Service in concert tonight at the Rogue Theater in Grants Pass. I read that you had no traditional flamenco training when you moved to the States. Is that true?
That's true. Yeah, I studied classical guitar from the age of 12 until about 16 or so, and then played mostly electric. And then after moving to Santa Fe, I met a flamenco guitar player there that had also spent a fair amount of time in Spain and learned a lot of the basics from him.
And what was it about that style of music that appealed to you?
Well, I think, first of all, I think of flamenco being the blues of the gypsies. Mm. So the music is very rhythmic, just as blues is, but in a very different direction. It's really Arabic blues because flamenco is mostly Arabic music, just as, you know, for example, Romani, which are the gypsy people, their music is different in every country that they live in. French gypsy music is very different from Hungarian gypsy music, and so on and so on. And in Spain, it has that character because of the Moors, which is basically, so it is Arabic music that has been preserved and changed and developed for hundreds of years by the gypsies. Mm.
And what is it about the nylon string that has drawn you to it? Obviously, you've stuck with it now for more than 30 years.
Yeah. I can't really... The first thing I like is that it's a much softer tone than the steel string guitar. And I also actually really like, and this will sound weird, I like the whole tactile sensation of playing the guitar. Mm. Everything about it, it's not, you know, a steel string guitar to me sounds pokey and it, you know, feels harsh. And I just like the way the guitar feels. And the flamenco tradition just has lots of really amazing techniques. And there have been jazz guitar players that have called it the best guitar technique there is, just because you can do so many things with it.
You refer to your music as Nouveau Flamenco. Yeah. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is that we needed a title for the album, and the record company came up with crap. So I was actually in a hotel room, and I saw an article on Nouvelle Cuisine. And I thought, well, hey, let's just use a French word. It'll make it sound different.
And you had released the album prior.
Yeah,
right?
It was out, it came out in August of 89 under the title Marita, Shadows and Storms, which was a title given to it by the guy who paid for the studio time. It was actually a handshake deal between him and me, and the idea was he was going to pay for the engineer, the studio, and the other musicians, and my payment was going to be the master once he had... made 1,000 CDs. So he made 1,000 CDs. He gave me the master, which was my payment for the work, and things just took off from there.
And how's that album doing now? How many copies have sold?
I know it's certified for 2 million copies.
I read somewhere that it is now the best-selling instrumental guitar album ever.
Yeah.
Does that blow your mind?
It seems strange, and let's face it, it's lucky that it happened in the 90s, because now you wouldn't make any money from that. You know, and literally, I looked at some of the numbers. I mean, people that are at the top of the charts, they're selling, you know, way less than what 10, 20 years ago, you know, regular middle-of-the-road acts were selling. So it happened to be the right music at the right time. And coming from sort of rock music, I used simple forms verse, chorus, a bridge. And I just happened to really like melodies, the things that you can hum. So it just happened to be something, you know, that was a little different. And people really took to it.
Otmar Liebert is my guest live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service. I read this interesting interview that you had done, which painted this romantic picture of the types of people that you are influenced by. And there were musicians in that group, but also you talk about artists. Uh-huh. And one of the fundamental attributes of those that you were inspired by was their use of flowing brush strokes to paint pictures. And I find that interesting because a few minutes ago you had talked about Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. And he was among the masters of doing that during his, you know, his heyday back in the late 1950s. Mm-hmm. But then again, toward the end of his life, right, he actually released an album based on color.
Right.
Aura, I believe it was called. And then the circle gets completed because you actually have the opportunity to be on the same stage opening for Miles Davis.
Yeah.
What was it about what he did?
I think there are two things to that story. The first is that the guitar, like the piano, can easily turn into, because of the nature of what it's like, there's no breath involved. So you can just go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And there are piano players and guitar players who will just play this storm of notes because there's no reason to stop. No forced reason, that is, that a trumpet player has. And so I find the breath part really important. And in fact, a lot of guitar players, George Benson used to sing along with his lines even before he was discovered as being a great singer, which he is. He did it simply so that he would have a natural form to the melody. Mm. Pat Metheny, I think his brother plays trumpet, but I think Pat Metheny even played trumpet early on. Santana always listened to saxophone stuff. So it's sort of a real great way to naturally play something organic.
Does it sound more human that way?
Well, as a matter of fact, it does because, I mean, unless you're really heavily trained in classical music or bebop, you're not going to remember melodies of more than 7 or 9 notes. That's just the way our brain functions. So it feels more organic, and it actually is something that people can wrap their heads around. And I do think it feels a lot more natural if you work that way.
Otmar Liebert is my guest live on Open Air here on Jefferson Public Radio. Can we hear another tune?
Sure. Thank you.
It's Otmar Liebert live on Open Air here on Jefferson Public Radio. That one actually goes back quite a while.
Yeah, right? 93.
Yeah, yes, way, way back. You named your band Black Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that name come from?
Federico Garcia Lorca. He wrote a brief poem about the gleam of the spurs of the highwaymen in the light of the black moon.
Hmm. And it was just something you decided was going to stick?
It sounded really good.
And you mentioned that John Gagan is still in the band.
Yes.
He has kind of been the one constant member. Everyone else kind of shifting and changing over the years. Is that a result of availability or because you're looking for some new people to bring in new ideas to the band?
It is a result of a bit of everything. I'm really picky about the drummers I work with. And some are just, things need to feel like they need to change. So, and also I like finding different instrumentation. In this case, we used accordion on the album and I thought it sounded really great, but the person that played the accordion doesn't tour. So, John and I were brainstorming about how we could do it live, and Mike's a friend of ours, and it just seemed natural because you don't have the bellows of the accordion, but you've got the breath for the trumpet. And it's really funny at night. Sometimes you see people that are sitting close when we come out, they see him, oh my God, there's a trumpet in front of me. But he doesn't have that, blaring trumpet sound at all. He's got a really gorgeous, beautiful tone that fits perfectly with the lines of the accordion.
Now, your music has got flamenco influences, a lot of different world music influences. Over the years, there have been keyboard instruments. Not so much the case anymore, but one label that has been put on your music over the years has been New Age, which is a term that has been a little polarizing over the years. It's been very popular and then fallen out of favor. You embraced the term, though, if I recall.
It's not something I did. I mean, the first label, they saw themselves as a New Age label, so... that's how they marketed the music, and that's the category on Billboard that the music ended up in. And once you're in that category, you cannot switch. So I have no problem with it. I think New Age brought some funny things, but it brought some really great things. It was, I think, part of the whole wave to a more organic lifestyle and. Looking at your after your health in a different way. So I think it's one of those things that, like you said, is polarizing, but I just see it as what it is.
And you record a lot. I mean, you've released more than 24 albums now.
Yeah.
Do you just hear that much music in your head, or are you driven to make a lasting recording of everything that you create?
Well, I think part of it is that I'd always hoped to have a recording contract in my early 20s, and I actually signed my deal when I was at the end of my 30th life year. So I think I always felt like, okay, I've got to put more out. And part of it is just that it's a nice cycle every year to think of something different... music and it's actually a really interesting personal cycle, because after I finished an album, when I was done with that, Dune, for example, you feel like you're like a sponge that's been wrung dry, and there, I tell myself there's not possibly any way that I'll ever make another album, and then I realize that I have that feeling after every album.
Mm. Well, you mentioned your attention to melody. Mm-hmm. Do your songs start with a melody in your head first, or do you come up with a concept of this multi-tracked choral sound?
That depends on the song. I've woken up and dreamt a song and then just played it, and I've also worked at it. Sometimes I create everything around the before the melody, not having a clue of what the melody will be like, and then it's for me a great pleasure and joy to sit down and actually figure out what melody that series of chords needs. Mm. So that I enjoy a lot.
Do you play other things or just guitar?
I have in the past, but I always come back to just playing guitar. I just enjoy it more. I don't like the way keyboards feel. And since John is really good at it, I'll just, send the tracks over to him and he sends back great keyboards.
Hmm. I remember reading that despite the success that you had over the years, that you were still occasionally playing the restaurant circuit, if from time to time, dropping in and playing at restaurants where you maybe knew the owner or
yeah.
Do you still do that? Do you still like wander down into town, Santa Fe, and play?
I don't do it much in Santa Fe anymore, although a few years back, John would play upright bass at a cafe, and every once in a while on, I think it was Wednesdays, I would just show up there and we'd play some stuff together.
That's got to be quite a thrill for people dining.
Well, it's also, you know, the biggest problem I have with the sort of the medium tours where, you know, you play the same size venue, it just becomes literally like, you know, what day is it? Where are we? And so I really enjoy playing like a performing arts center one day, a theater, a club, you know, different size venues. And it just keeps you on your toes a little bit. Plus, you know, sometimes you can barter with a cook and get some great food for the price of a hour of playing music. That's really what it's all about.
Where are some of the hot spots of your fans? I mean, you've traveled the world at this point playing.
Well, I recently discovered I have a nice following in Germany, and so I've been playing there every year, sometimes once with a band, but mostly by myself. Obviously, Santa Fe, California, Texas, Florida, pretty much all over the states. I think last year we did a tour, we played in Latvia, and I've played there 3 or 4 times, which I thought was surprising. We played in Turkey and Italy and Greece. And judging from the emails I get, I actually have quite a following in the rest of the world, too. You know, people from Iraq and Iran. So it's an interesting spread. We actually did, I did an album with a friend of mine, Rahim Al-Hajj, who plays oud. He's from Iraq. He's one of the great oud players. And we did an album a few years ago and made it available for free. So if you want to listeners, go to otmarliebert.com/rose. They can download the album there for free.
Otmar Liebert is my guest live on Open Air today here on the Rhythm and News service of JPR and streaming at ijpr.org. Do we have time for one more?
Sure.
It's Otmar Liebert live on Open Air here on Jefferson Public Radio's Rhythm and News Service. Otmar Liebert, thanks so much for being our guest here on JPR.